Hey, welcome to the Push Pull Sales and Marketing Podcast. I'm Marcello.
And I'm Sherry. And each episode will provide you with sales and marketing strategies that you can implement immediately into your own business.
All right. Today, I'm speaking with Michelle Weinstein. She is a sales strategist who specializes in helping entrepreneurs learn how to sell without being sleazy. She's pitched her way onto Shark Tank, raised over $1 million for her last company, has gotten her products into Costco and the Vitamin Shoppe. Michelle has used the same formula to make all these things happen, and I'm excited to speak more with her about these ideas. Thanks for coming on the podcast, Michelle.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm very excited to be here.
Yeah. So for someone who's not familiar, can you tell me a little bit more about yourself, your background?
Yes, I would love to. So my name is Michelle, aka the Pitch Queen. I do not like to talk about my last name right now, because the guy who has my last name is not such a good guy. So. I am just the
that's right. I'm being timely. I didn't think about that. Okay.
Yeah. I used to want to be related to him as if he were my uncle, but we're going to just leave it as the Pitch Queen.
I like that.
I love to help entrepreneurs and salespeople really sell without selling and without being sleazy. And that is my main mission, is how can I help more of you guys make a bigger difference for the people that you help, which will ultimately make a bigger difference in the money and revenues that you make. Because the greater your revenues are, the more people you're helping ultimately with your services or products, depending on what you're selling.
Absolutely.
So that's a little bit about me. I host also a podcast called Success Unfiltered, where I talk and interview a lot of people, really cool people, everyone from entrepreneurs to pro athletes to performers and actors, about being told no and being rejected. Because if you're an entrepreneur or a salesperson, you probably got told no a couple times, or you've probably been rejected. And a lot of times that just really sets us in a funk. And how do you get out of that funk? And what do you do? And how do you overcome that to get to the success level that you want? So that's pretty much what I focus on. I do a lot of consulting, and I love doing these types of interviews and helping you guys however I can.
That's awesome. That's awesome. And obviously, you know, just learning to sell without being sleazy, you're going to have more fun doing it. You know, you're going to be able to relax more. And in the end, you're going to end up being a lot more successful. So in terms of what you're doing right now, how do you end up where you're at right now? Again, it seems like you have a very successful career, really diversified background. So how'd you end up to where you're at today?
So how I ended up to where I'm at today, over the last 20 years, I have done a lot of different sales related things. I've sold everything from wardrobes at Nordstrom's, from raising over $1 million for my last company. You know, that is a form of sales, raising money and pitching for investment.
Sure.
And then I've also gotten our products into Costco. I pitched on Shark Tank. I've sold online products that are anywhere from $30,000 to $35,000 on over the phone. I've been in the real estate industry. I've been in the mortgage industry. So over the last 20 years, I've done a little of everything as it relates to sales. And I had to close my last company March 27th of this year. I did not raise the amount of money that I needed to get to where we wanted to go in a really, really crowded market space. I started way before anyone else in the prepared food business.
Mm-hmm.
And in order to keep up with all the competition, you had to have pretty steep, deep pockets when it comes to marketing and doing ads and other things to get your name out there. And, you know, getting into Costco and Vitamin Shoppe and a few other things just wasn't enough to compete with all the other companies like Plated and Blue Apron and all these people that came about. So we made a hard choice, and I went to Maui for a couple weeks, and I thought, what is it that I'm really, really good at? And what is my mission and my passion? And it's really, how can I help more entrepreneurs and salespeople learn everything that I know? And if I look at what I did in my last company, the 20% that I was awesome at was the sales piece. It was the business development piece and really getting our products and into more stores, or pitching and raising the money, even though I didn't raise exactly what we needed to get. I mean, we were needing about $6 to $8 million. So it was a big ask.
Wow.
And, you know, I was really also stuck in a corner. I was stuck in a corner because I could only really ship regionally. And I'm based in San Diego, and to make it affordable to the masses, you know, I couldn't really ship nationwide, let alone get outside of the USA. So now I'm able to make a difference and an impact on a worldwide level. And I've helped a couple companies grow. One of them grew an extra million, a little over $1 million in the last 6 months, and the other one about $340,000 in the last 5 months. So for me to see them succeed is really what it's about for me. So if I can help other people make a bigger impact for their clients and whatever you're selling, your products and services, that's what it's all about now. And with the podcast and other things I'm able to do online and talk to awesome people like you, I can make a bigger impact. And that's really what it's about, because I was so stuck in such a small area before.
Yeah. So, and again, a lot of people listening are always curious, especially when we have people who, for example, maybe in terms of the entrepreneurship side was something that they were doing on the side, and talk about making the leap or talking about like actually having that actual transition. So when did you know, and how do you navigate through that? Cause we have people who are in the process of doing that now, or maybe like, well, should I back out? Should I keep going? Like, how do you keep those people going?
Oh my gosh. That's a great, great, great question. And it's probably the most difficult thing that was, you know, when they talk about like you're carrying this weight on your shoulders, mm-hmm. I probably had a barbell with like 400 pounds on each side. I was probably carrying about 1,000 pounds of weight around me for the last year and a half. Mm-hmm. But I always, and I'm sure a lot of you guys can relate, like you have this carrot dangling in front of your face and there's always this next opportunity. And I had put the last 10 years of my life into the last company, but really ultimately, the writing was on the wall about a year and a half ago. And I knew that with the competition that never existed before, that we had to really step up our game. You know, word of mouth and what we were doing just wasn't enough. And in the food business, your margins were really, really slim. Mm-hmm. So not only did I need money for marketing and getting the word out on a greater scale, but I didn't really have any margin for error. And the second you make a mistake in the food business, you're pretty much out of business. And I think with a couple of mistakes that are very costly and not having enough marketing funds, I didn't really have any other choices. I was kind of getting pushed into a corner. Like if I were in a boxing ring, like mm-hmm. I got knocked out and I was knocked out and I'm like in the 9th round and I've been hit to the head so many times that there was only really one or two more chances left. And it was the end of March. And you know when they say things come in threes, like I had a kitchen, I was renting it out during the times that we weren't using it. Mm-hmm. And I got a call from my head chef that the people renting bailed through the middle of the night. So that was clue number one. Number two, I was on a monthly retainer with another company in New York that wanted to do prepared meals and link it with their products. They did supplements and online workouts. So it was a great fit.
Yeah.
It was awesome, right? But to do food is not the easiest task. And we were about a month and a half in on the contract. And it was a month-to-month contract, so I knew that I could get told no at any moment. Mm-hmm. And it was on my birthday. This was my birthday present, by the way. All these three things happened on my birthday.
Nice.
Not nice. No, it was a depressing birthday. So they told me, you know what, Michelle, we're going to go a different direction. We are not going to do the food. We really appreciate all of your help. Granted, I did get paid for our time, but it obviously wasn't enough to carry a company. We were doing a little over $1 million. So in revenue and, you know, their $5,000 a month wasn't cutting it. We were looking for that big opportunity. And then the third thing that happened was three of our competitors decided to go out of business. So there was the Fresh Diet, Freshology, and the week prior, MyFit Foods closed 50 of their stores. Hmm. And our investors, you know, a lot of it isn't about me. So if you're a one-man show or you've got an investor or business partner, mm-hmm. you know, they're also part of your decision-making process. So
absolutely.
For us, it was like, how are these investors going to see a return on their investment at the end of the day? And so when all of these three things happened, I was at the NFL Combine at the time. We have a niche with pro sports. We were doing prepared meals on planes, and we, you know, I still help that company out today. But mm-hmm. my point is that you've got to know when to stop. And it's the hardest thing to do. I probably should have stopped in July of 2016, but there was always this next opportunity or this next deal. And when it's your business and you've got millions of dollars and hundreds of thousands and millions of hours of your time and on the line, it's kind of hard to stop or pivot and change and do something different when you've been doing something that you're so passionate about for so long. And we had so many successes. I mean, we were in Costco, we got in the vitamin shop. They spent over $1 million on a test, a 6-month test. And then their CEO decided to retire. And at the retirement day, I knew that was our last day. You know, like new CEOs basically can every single idea the previous guy had, right?
Sure.
So it's one of the most difficult things, but I say it's similar to probably hiring people. You want to hire slowly and fire fast.
Yes.
Well, right? Like that's one of the, I'm sure you can relate to that if you've ever hired a team of employees.
Absolutely.
But when it comes to closing your business or moving on or saying, you know what, this isn't going to work and you need to make a pivot and really change, you've got to sort of make those decisions quick, because every month that went on, it probably cost me about $25,000 to $30,000. For every month we did not make a shift, it would cost us that much money in something we weren't doing on the other side. So,
yeah. Yeah. I mean, very, very, very good answer on that one. And again, in terms of like what you're talking about, because we had that similar, like when you have industries where you have such a small margin for error. In fact, we are working with another company that it's actually a newer offshoot from a previous company. And literally it was one email that was sent out, and it had offended basically their actual client base, or not really their client base, but in terms of like one of their strategic partners, just like that one small decision, and yeah, the investor backed out, and again, like small things like that. So now, harder question then. So I think I know the answer, and I'm kind of going changing the format a little bit. One change you would make in terms of your career, what would you do differently starting over again?
Starting over again, I would definitely say that with my last business, there's a pro and a con to this answer.
Mm-hmm.
I would have found a co-founder that had been in the industry that I wanted to get into. So I came from more of a sales background, business development. I had no clue what I was getting into with food. I had no idea I was going to become a food manufacturing business. I had no idea the amount, how to sell food. You had to be really good at taking pictures. So I highly recommend that, depending on where you're going, especially if it's product-based, possibly finding a co-founder that has already done it once. You know, okay. Finding someone that can really help you in the areas that you're not good at. And what's difficult on that part is that you don't know what you don't know. And I had no idea that I was getting into the food manufacturing space, right? Like I thought I was just going to help people change their lives one meal at a time.
Mm-hmm.
I also started the company because I didn't like to cook, nor do I know how to cook very well. So the other challenge was that my whole kitchen staff, if they walked out, I would have been SOL, right? So it would have been good to have a partner that was a chef or sort of knew how to cook, because if everyone were to walk out on you one day, you need to be prepared to do all parts of the business. I could not do 50% of that business,
wow.
Which was the cooking. So that's what I would have done differently. And what I'm making sure going forward is that I can do 80 to 90% of the business and be really, really good at it. And I can always outsource. I'm outsourcing to about 5 different people right now. I've got a team of about 5 and a few interns, because I love teaching young, motivated people what I know and giving them an opportunity to really learn what it's like in the real life, because this is better than school. Being an entrepreneur, I like to say that my last company was my $2 million MBA program. And I actually wrote an ebook on those 10 secrets that I wish I would have known prior to starting that company. So that will save a lot of people a lot of money.
Oh, and cool.
Yeah, it's really, really good. And a lot of it is what we're talking about right now.
Yeah.
And having, you know, I mean, everything from like, I mean, I've been part of lawsuits. I had no idea I was going to be in lawsuits. You know, it's like all of these things that set us back, you don't plan for, and how you can plan for it going forward. So I'll send you the link to that one too, if you want to put it out there. It's really,
good. So for any of the listeners, we'll make sure to have links to all this in the actual show notes. But obviously that's a very helpful resource, and we'd love to point people in that direction. So
now it's how do I take what I've learned and share it with others? Because I've been working with a few local businesses here in San Diego, and, you know, I've definitely helped a few of them get out of a couple of situations that could have cost them upwards of $100,000 to $200,000, be it employee issues, like things that I can see way ahead of other people just from having the experience. And I think that's the biggest thing for me in doing this is I've had 20 years of real life experiences.
Experience matters, and absolutely.
Yeah, definitely.
Okay, so someone comes up, I find you on Instagram, Google, I see the pitch queen. So let's just say you're whatever, I meet you. So what do people ask you? So what are some common questions you ask yourself? So like, all right, so what does the pitch queen do? Or like, all right, so help me out. Like, so what are questions people ask you all the time?
So a lot of the questions that I get are related to the podcast, or I host this Facebook live show called Coffee is for Closers. So it's a lot of basic sales education.
Okay.
But if you ask what the pitch queen does, I am here to educate and help you change the lives of your clients or your customers, right? If you have a really, really amazing product or a really, really amazing service, you can really do some really, really amazing things. And a lot of it, like we were talking about earlier, is a lot of things in our successes stem from where our mind is at. So a lot of what we talk about is mindset stuff, or getting over the no's and getting over the rejections. And that's what I talk about on the podcast, Success Unfiltered. So a lot of it is just information to help you put it into practice. And then I do some consulting. So people do hire me to train sales teams, to teach their sales teams. I would say my specialty is if you're selling something between the price of $3,000 and $50,000, that is my wheelhouse. I can help you show value. Like, I have to believe in what you're selling first in order to be able to help you. So, you know, there's not many people, I turn away a lot, but a lot of my free content really helps a lot of people, which is my goal, is sharing that with you guys, you know, to build that confidence, believe in yourself, so you can make a bigger difference for the people that you're helping. And really, as entrepreneurs, I'm also reminding you guys that we signed up for 24/7 sales jobs, and that you have to always be on. And there's ways that you can be on at all times.
Absolutely. So going back, so talking about that three to $50,000 price range. So does it matter if someone wants to reach out and let's say, hey, I have a lot of I'm selling a lot in the education space, or I'm selling a lot in terms of, you know, like in terms of local government or something like that. Maybe I sell like a software or something like that, and I service maybe mm-hmm. actual municipalities. Is it really a different approach? I mean, do you feel like you can help people and maybe some a little bit more niche?
The B2B?
Like B2B versus like doing like private sales versus maybe, you know, selling to institutions, you know, like do you feel like you can differentiate that, or like where do you feel like your services fit well?
I would say my services fit well in more of if you're selling on the phone a lot, I'm very, very good at that. But the processes of selling B2B, if you're doing software, your sales cycle might be just a little bit longer. But as far as building the relationship and understanding it's not about you, and understanding your client's problems in depth, and understanding what questions to ask them in order to serve them at the highest level, that strategy trickles in with pretty much every single sales cycle, depending on what it is. So the sales process is similar. The length of time might be different, because in in a corporate setting, it just takes longer to get meetings. But as far as prepping for the meetings is going to be the same, whereas the person selling an online education program, that sales cycle is going to be a lot faster and shorter.
Yeah. And it's interesting too, because what you're talking about earlier, again, talking about that actual like mindset and feeling like the process is the same. So if you're selling a $3,000 product or a $50,000 product, if you do the right process, it should probably be just as easy to close something $50,000 as it is $3,000 if you have the right, if you have the right steps in place. No,
it is. And let me give you an example. So one of the companies that I consult for, they sell an education product for CPAs. It's high level tax planning. And some of the students in the class are selling tax plans anywhere from like $7,000 to upwards of $100,000, $110,000.
Mm-hmm.
How we go about selling the one at $7,000 or the one at $110,000 is the exact same process. It's not any different. It's just the savings that, you know, the client's not paying to the IRS is significantly different, but the process is the same. In addition to that, her education program, she also has one for financial advisors. The one for CPAs is of the lower price point, where the one for the advisors is at $30,000. The same sales process applies to both.
Cool.
Yep.
So if someone were to reach out, and I put almost everybody on this spot, so say, all right, so why would I hire you over someone else? What's really setting you apart from your competitors?
I would say the biggest thing that sets myself apart as the pitch queen from everybody else is that I've done it. I've got proven results to show you. I've got 20 plus years of in real life experiences that a lot of people don't have. And I've sold a lot of different things, everything from being in the face-to-face of Nordstrom's to being in real estate and mortgages, to selling online education products, to also pitching to top investors in the world on Shark Tank. So I've been there and I've done it, and I've been in the trenches and I know exactly what it's like. So I can bring real life experience to you that a lot of other people can't bring. And I will also be the first to tell you if I don't think that we're a good fit, which a lot of people don't do. I won't just work with anybody. You know, if you're talking to me about some complex software or something and it's out of my wheelhouse, I'll be the first to tell you and also refer you to someone who probably would be a better fit.
Awesome. So especially being in the industry for so long and again, having that actual experience, let me ask you, what do you think is the biggest mistake that salespeople are making now? And is it the same mistake that people are making 20 years ago?
I would say the biggest mistake that salespeople are still currently making today, well, it's two things. One, they make it a lot about them, where in the sales process, it has nothing to do about you. It does, if that makes sense to you.
Yeah, no, so absolutely.
What I'm saying is that for the high level, really successful salespeople, they have removed themselves out of it personally. They've done a lot of work on themselves, personal development, read a lot of books, and understanding where your mind is at all times. That's number one. Number two, you can't be attached to the outcome because it's not about you. It's about your client. And if your client and if you're able to solve their problem and you're a good fit for them, then you're able to help them and they will buy. I think a lot of times salespeople are of the mindset of being convincing to them. You shouldn't have to convince at all. There's no convincing going on. It's you've shared your problem. And as a salesperson, if you've done a good job, you really, really understand the problem in pure depth, like really, really deep understanding of it. And you're able to provide that solution to them that can really make a difference and change their game. And if you can provide some results of success, similar or something like that, testimonials, that's really where you can excel from a lot of the other people out there. You know, I think a lot of salespeople or entrepreneurs selling their products and services don't do a good job at presenting their proof of concept or testimonials or what they've been able to help other people with.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. So again, in terms of letting go of the process, being a little bit more prescriptive, basically saying, hey, this is the outcome that you're looking for. Here's where we've done it before based off of what you have. This is going to be the best solution. If not, I'll point you in the right direction. And that is very, very hard for salespeople. Cause again, talking about without being sleazy and all that good stuff, if you think about any sales movie and even like your first Black Coffee is for closers, people have that vision, or there's a movie about like car salespeople. The Goods. Seen that movie?
Yes. Yeah.
Exactly.
I love all those sales movies, and I watch them and I'm like, God, they're doing that wrong. But you can learn a lot of what not to do in those movies, and they're very entertaining.
Very entertaining. Absolutely.
Right?
Yep. So in terms of like today, and again, you talk about selling on the phone, and some people might be a little bit leery about that, or maybe you have these evangelists that say, oh, you're not able to sell on the phone anymore, or you need to do this, or you need to buy like this course. What are the challenges salespeople are going to face moving forward? Like what do you feel like is the next thing that salespeople have to adapt to?
I think with the way things are going, and obviously a lot of it has to depend on what you're selling, but mm-hmm. I talk to a lot of salespeople and entrepreneurs every single week, and awesome people like you. And I think what we need to really focus on is the phone stuff, is the in real life person stuff, because this whole online thing and just selling online, I think it's not going to work for very long, because A, it's super crowded, and B, people buy from people.
Mm-hmm.
At the end of the day, they're still buying from you. And if you make a video or a sales video, that's great, but that's a video. That's not real life. So it could have been edited. It could have been transformed. It could be not really you. But when you get someone A in person or B on the phone, you're getting like a real human. And I think the real human connection is still where you're going to thrive, right? Like people don't raise money on online really that well, right? Like they might get Kickstarter campaigns and other things and do a really amazing video, but the dollar amounts are low. So if you're selling something that's of a low value or a low dollar amount, then I think that will still work. But mm-hmm. if you're selling anything from $3,000 to $50,000, you're going to be on the phone. You're going to be in person. If you're raising money and selling your piece of your company, then you will be doing that in person for very high values. I mean, people are not going to write $103.5 million checks on off a video online if you had a good story. That's just not going to happen.
Absolutely. So in terms of, and again, obviously, I'm not going to have you give away all the goods, but let's say someone was working on a pitch. Let's say I'm trying to raise money for my company. How do people prepare for that? What would be some mistakes so that people can avoid doing that?
Well, again, selling to an investor is similar to selling your product or service to your potential clients or customers. Okay. So it's got to be about the investor. What's in it for them? What is this company going to do for them? How are you going to do their return on investment? What is the future cash flow like? When are dividends going to be paid out? So when you're thinking about the investor, yes, they're going to invest in you as an entrepreneur and as a founder. That's 1,000% guaranteed. Mm-hmm. People invest in people. They also have to like your product and your business, but that usually comes secondary from what I've seen. Mm-hmm. And I think, you know, you've seen that on Shark Tank, and I've seen it at a lot of pitch festivals and competitions and other places. But I think the biggest mistake is that you're pitching and selling your company or piece of it, if it's 30%, 40% for X number of dollars. Yes, it's about to help you grow the company, but you have to think about what's in it for your investors. That's got to be the bulk of the conversation. And how is that money going to be used to ultimately grow your top line revenue if that's your strategy? Or mm-hmm. is your investor going to be someone who needs to see bottom line profit? There's multiple types of investors, but you've got your VCs who only care about your top line growth, mm-hmm. and they could care less that you're losing $100,000-$500,000 a month. And then there's investors more like angels that want to see your profit. So you also have to know, who are you pitching to? Who is your target audience in this? So another thing for people that are raising money, and when I was raising money, is you have to have a few different pitches, a pitch deck for different types of investors. Because if you're raising money with let's say a strategic investor, like I was with the Vitamin Shop, they were basically like a strategic partner.
Sure.
The pitch to them had to be about them. What's in it for them? How is it going to help the vitamin shop? How is it going to help their customers? How is it going to help their top line revenue? How is it going to differentiate them from the competition and all the other GNCs in the country, right? That's mm-hmm. how I made that happen. But if I'm pitching for, you know, $200,000 to help me produce more product from an angel investor, that pitch is going to look very different. So understanding who your investor is number one. And number two, I would be prepared to have, you know, 3 to 4 different pitches that you're already prepared for each of the different types of investors that you might be pitching to. Does that help?
Yeah, absolutely. So how crowded is that? How crowded actually is that space, Michelle? So how many people actually get to that point where they're trying to actually get to the investors? Like how much competition is there for that investor's dollar?
Oh gosh, I think it just depends on who you're talking to. I mean, when I was raising money, gosh, I've been raising money for 10 years. It's not easy. It is so almost, and this is the other thing of why I would have a partner in mm-hmm. my business before. Well, if I could do one thing different, because when I was raising money, my focus was all on that. It wasn't on the business. And it's hard to do both. Raising sure. money is a full-time sales job, literally. Mm-hmm. So that is one of the biggest things that I would change, especially for a product-based business. If mm-hmm. you have a product and you're trying to get into retailers and sell on e-commerce and do things, like you need to have someone in the front lines with you, side by side, going 110% at the same pace, especially if you're raising money too. It is very challenging to do it all on your own. And I rather have less of a bigger company than a bigger piece of a small company.
Okay. Sounds good. So in terms of maybe what are you like the most proud of in terms of maybe how you helped out a company or maybe like how a product you brought to market actually helped somebody. So in terms of your products and services you've done over the years, what are you the most proud of?
That's a good question. I would say I'm proud of a few things. I think with my last company, I mean, we were really literally changing lives through changing what people ate every day and making it more convenient. You didn't have to cook, you didn't have to clean, you didn't have to grocery shop, you didn't have to do dishes. Like not only did we shave off a ton of time off people's lives, but the quality of the food that they were eating was so great. The quality was on point. The food tasted good. So it helped them in so many different ways. I'm very proud of that, even though it didn't work in the long run. Being underfunded and undercapitalized can put you out of business. And with tons of competition that blew up in the last 24 months.
Sure.
Most recently, what I'm most proud of is being able to help 2 different companies grow their top line revenue and help. So one of them was in Major League Baseball. We helped cater 16 different Major League Baseball teams while on the road. I did not do the food part. I was just on the sales side and really helping them have better quality food while traveling on the road, which is the biggest change in baseball this season with the CBA that went into place last year. So it was really great. We did over $1 million in revenue in a 6-month period, and that didn't exist last year. It was at 0 revenue. So to go from 0 to over $1 million and be able to service all of these clients in such a short amount of time and provide them a high quality food, a pro athlete needs high quality food. That was a pretty big accomplishment. And I'm very proud of that. And for the other company that hired me, you know, really being able to change the lives of CPAs and advisors and have them get paid what they're worth is a good feeling, because a CPA, for all of you entrepreneurs and business owners, you all have a CPA. They do your accounting, they do your books, and they look out for you on the business side. But with that company, they teach it at such a deep level that really, really helps businesses plan their taxes so you can reinvest those dollars in your business. And it is awesome what she's able to do and teach CPAs. It's just been an amazing ride, and to generate that much revenue for her in such a short amount of time and help her clients out, it's pretty rewarding.
Yeah, absolutely. So in terms of like for the CPA company, where do you think in the actual sales process were you able to make the biggest difference? Was this terms of like their actual lead gen tactics, or was this like once something entered the funnel, like where did you feel like you had the biggest impact for them?
For me, the biggest impact is once the lead is in the funnel. Okay. So how is that lead called? What is it? You know, what's the process with the lead? What's the follow-up like? What's the referral process? I mean, we're able to generate a lot of referrals. It's one of the biggest, that's another thing that a lot of salespeople and entrepreneurs miss out on is we're not asking enough for referrals. And if you're able to provide an amazing service or, you know, product, and these CPAs are learning stuff they've never learned before in master's in accounting classes, like pretty much unless you're a tax attorney, you don't know a lot of the stuff that she's teaching. So for your traditional CPA, it's mind blowing to them. And well, why not ask for referrals, right? So that's one of my specialties. I call it like being professionally annoying. And when you can become professionally annoying and really get referrals, it can be great. And I use this strategy and tactic on my podcast. I mean, I've had John Lee Dumas on it, Pat Flynn. I'm interviewing Mel Robbins next week. So I'm getting some really awesome guests and talking to them about their no's and their rejections. But guess what? It happened off referrals.
Absolutely. And I love Mel Robbins, by the way. I'm not sure if we can have her on the podcast because she dropped when we have like a, we have like whatever, like I don't think we have any profanity on her actual podcast. But I like her stuff. I mean, I'll admit, I absolutely like her stuff, and I'm from Jersey, so she kind of talks similar to how I talk.
Yeah.
But yeah, so in terms of, let's say, a recommendation, you know, it could be a book, could be an app or a course or resource, obviously excluding what you have right now, what kind of recommendation would you give our listeners right now?
I will email you the name of the book. I always forget it. That's okay. I think it's called, it's the Four Quadrants of Selling. I'll get you the exact name and you can put it in the notes. But it's this book that talks about where is your client or customer or investor at when it comes to when you're talking to them about your products or services, right? People are sometimes in a gain mode. Sometimes they're in a problem, right? You're solving their problem. They're going to buy now because they need it now. So it's a really interesting book. Or, I mean, how about Mel Robbins, right?
Yeah.
The 5-second rule.
I like that. That's a good one. There we go. Perfect. We got two. All right. So listeners, there sounds good. Very interesting background. I want to get a hold of you, Michelle. I want to get a hold of the Pitch Queen. How do our listeners go about doing that?
hello@thepitchqueen.com. Send me an email.
Send you
or
an email.
Or visit thepitchqueen.com or follow me on Instagram. I do all the DMs in there. I actually love to talk to people and figure out how I can help and be of service. So I'm at the Pitch Queen on Facebook. I'm the Pitch Queen, but shoot me an email. hello@thepitchqueen.com and I'll write you back.
Awesome. Awesome. So do you have any final thoughts, any final words of wisdom for our listeners?
My final thoughts are, and I always like to end it with, anything, is take action on one thing. Like if there's one thing you heard today that can help you or one thing that just really stuck out and resonated with you, write it down and put it into action. I think a lot of things that get in our way with people is that we don't put things into action. We hear a lot of things. I love to inspire and motivate and be all excited and happy for you guys and go out there and sell your products and services and help more people to make a bigger difference in this world. But guess what? Nothing happens without taking action. And I'm all about action. So if you can just do one thing, put it into action, you're going to be that much further ahead.
Awesome. Well, thanks again. Really excited to have you on the show. We'll get this edited and we'll get this out. Thanks again.
Thank you so much.
Have a good one.